ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th Canto, Chapter 26, Text 7, 8, 9, and 10. I'll run through 7, 8, and 9. Number 10 has a purport. We'll start from there. Text 7. Once his mother tied him with ropes to a mortar because she had caught him stealing butter. Then, crawling on his hands, he dragged the mortar between a pair of Arjuna trees and pulled them down. Purport. The two Arjuna trees were old and thick, and they towered above little Krishna's courtyard. Nevertheless, he pulled them down quite, they were pulled down quite easily by the naughty child. Text 8. Another time, when Krishna was tending the calves in the forest together with Balaram and the cowherd boys, the demon Bakasura came with the intention of killing Krishna. But Krishna seized this inimical demon by the mouth and tore him apart. Number 9. Desiring to kill Krishna, the demon Vatsasura disguised himself as a calf and entered among Krishna's calves. But Krishna killed the demon and, using his body, enjoyed the sport of knocking kapita fruits down from the trees. That's number 10. Atva rasha bhadaityeyam tadbandum cha balan vitam chakritalavanam shemam paripakva palavitam atva rasha bhadaityeyam Tad bandum sha balavita chakritalavanam shemam pari pakva palanvitam hatva rasham badaityam tad bandum sha balavita Chakritalavanam shemam Paripakva palanvitam Killing. Rishabha, who appeared as a jackass. Daityayam, the descendant of Giti. Tatbandum, the demon's companions. Cha, and Balaanvita, a accompanied by Balaram. Chakre, he made. Talavanam, the Talavan forest. Samam, auspicious. Pare Pavak, fully ripened. Pala, with fruits. Anvitam, filled. Translation. Together with Lord Balaram, Krishna killed the jackass demon and all his friends, thereby securing the safety of the Talavan forest, which abounded with fully ripened palm fruits. Please repeat. Together with Lord Balaram, Krishna killed the jackass demon and all his friends, thereby securing the safety of the Talavan forest, which abounded with fully ripened palm fruits. You know, it may just be a generational thing from the time period in which I grew up in. I'm sure it's not so prominent now. But the word jackass just carries such a, you know, if at any time growing up your father referred to you, jackass, you knew you were really in trouble. Poor, poor. Long, long ago, the powerful demons Hiranyakasipu and Hiranyaksha were born of the goddess Diti. Therefore, demons are commonly called daityas, or daityas, meaning descendants of Diti. Dhanakasura, the ass demon, terrorized the Tala forest with his friends, but Sri Krishna and Sri Balaram killed them just as modern governments kill terrorists who harass innocent people. Om Ajnana Tamarandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangum Lam Jayati Girim Yap Kripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dini Karina Apancha Kalpa Tudubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhu Vaheva Cha Gitanam Pavani Vyo Vaishnavi Vyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, listening to Bhadra's class yesterday, I realized that I had no qualification to speak on the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But, by the grace and the mercy of the Vaishnavas and blessings of Srila Prabhupada, I'll give some attempt at it. So, 8,400,000 different species of life. We drop into this collection, if you will, of the material realm, and we begin our journey from Lord Brahma all the way down to the Indragopa germ, all kinds of different varieties and options, and struggling through all of this in complete ignorance, we have a lack of true knowledge. This is the meaning of ignorance, to not understand a knowledge, to not have the correct answers. Now, within that 8,400,000 species, Srila Prabhupada explains that 400,000 are considered, are in the human species, in the human realm. Sometimes you try and understand, wow, how are there 400,000 different types of species of human beings? And then you spend a day working at Lowe's, and you really understand very easily. So, of those 400,000 species, Prabhupada indicates that only a few are actually civilized. So, you've got 8,400,000 species, 400,000 are humans, and the human species is where you actually get to inquire, to pursue spiritual development. The animals, they don't get that opportunity. Prabhupada would always classically say, you don't see the cats and dogs, and of course around here the raccoons, coming to the morning Bhagavatam class. You know, this is for the human beings. So, but then within that 400,000, there's a very limited number that are actually civilized enough to begin to inquire, why am I here? What is my purpose? Atato Brahma Jignasa. This is actually, Bhagavatam says, when real human life begins. When we make that inquiry, why am I here? What is the absolute truth? What is the supreme goal of life? So these types of questions, they are kind of like the gateway, you might say, for actually being a human being. I mean, we may be walking on two legs, and we may be driving cars and being successful in business and this and that, and whatever it is that we do in our life, you know, academically accomplished and so on. But unless we make that initial inquiry, who am I? Why am I here? What's the purpose of this life? We're not actually considered to be a human being, which is kind of amazing here again, because when you look around at everybody that we interact with, wow, there's not that many of us out there that are human beings. So what's that they say? But by the grace of God go I. So but by the grace of Srila Prabhupada are we. So, you know, we have been blessed and given this very wonderful opportunity. And of course, as Keshava was describing, it's our obligation to go and share that with others, you know, and in so many different ways we can do that. I mean, if you just look at all the different types of activities in this community alone, which are being done to spread Krishna consciousness and to give that gift of real human life to others, it's quite amazing. It's quite amazing. There's so much variety there. So nobody can say, oh, well, you know, I made it, but I don't know how to help anybody else get there. You know, that's actually our heritage, our spiritual obligation to make that connection with others. So we get this process, we're there, and then we have the function of what we do while we are endeavoring in that way. And that process is called Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smaranam, and so on. So the process of the nine different types of devotional service that we can render. Now, Shravanam, Kirtanam, it's not something that's meant only for hearing in this particular age. While we do the process of hearing and the process of the holy name is particularly applicable in this age, it's not exclusive to this age. It's the actual means of our deliverance in this age, but it's present in all times because it's part of the nine devotional processes. So the Shravanam Kirtanam process, it actually engages first our brain or our mind and then engages the ear. So the brain, the mind, has to make that step to want to connect through hearing. Here again, this goes back to understanding what's the purpose of my life. You know, there's so many things we can hear. So in this particular chapter, chapter 26, it's entitled Wonderful Krishna. And the cowherd men, they're showing us by their own example all of these different processes that we've just described leading up to the real culmination of human life. Of course, you know, their bewilderment, their confusion, if you will, was all a part of the wonderful covering potency of Yoga Maya. Unlike what we're all experiencing, this is actually just a part of the eternal divine pastimes with the Lord, and it becomes sweeter by this particular process here. The cowherd men have observed now for some, what we just finished lifting Govardhan. We just finished reading about Krishna lifting Govardhan Hill. Actually, kind of, we were under the hill with him if we were really absorbed in the hearing process. So we just finished the Govardhan Hill, and Krishna did this the seventh. So for the last 7 years, the cowherd men have been just like, wow. Did you hear about what he did today? Check out Krishna's latest activities. You know, if there was, and well, we want to go there, internet, you get all the headlines, Krishna lifts Govardhan Hill, Putin in a witch killing, you know, all these different things. So, but at any rate, you know, so the cowherd men are quite absorbed in this. So now, with the culmination of lifting of Govardhan Hill, they're really like astounded. Okay, I mean, all right, he killed this Putin, a demon, and then he, this Trinavarta wind demon, okay, and he kicked over a card, okay. But he lifted the entire Govardhan Hill? I mean, it's just like, they're completely, like, bewildered. You know, who is Krishna? I mean, is he God? Well, how could he be God? He's a little boy. But how could he not be God? He just lifted Govardhan. So, you know, they're going on and on like this, you know. And in addition, how could we love him so much? Because each one of these pastimes they describe as we work through this chapter, it just increases their loving feelings for the Lord. The more they talk about Krishna, the more they develop their love for Krishna. And the more they develop the love for Krishna, the more they want to talk about Krishna. So it's this amazing cycle which the residents of Vrindavan are completely captured in, and which hopefully we aspire to also be captured in. So, in this bewildered and confused state, they do what the living entity in a different type of realm needs to do, and that is approach someone who can give them direction. Approach someone who can correct their confusion. Of course, this is the whole conversation, the whole pastime of the Bhagavad Gita, and this is our gateway into development of our spiritual life. And so in the same way, the cowherd men said, well, we have to go to somebody that can answer these questions for us. Among ourselves, we can't figure it out. I mean, we've sat here and talked, and you can just imagine Upananda and, all the different cowherd men, and maybe some of the older but junior ones, and they're all discussing this and trying. All right, wait a minute. One of them finally said, all right, wait a minute. We have to go and talk to Nanda Maharaj. First of all, Nanda Maharaj is the senior most man. He's the father of Krishna in addition, and he's the king of the area. So he's the authority. So let's go to him. So this is also a nice example for us that when we're in confusion, when we're bewildered, we have to go to that person who can actually answer our questions. This also takes a little bit of thought process and common sense. Who do we approach? Now, of course, the cowherd men. I love this one letter. I often think of it. Someone was writing Prabhupada this laundry list of questions. I mean, it was just like this long, long list, and Prabhupada was answering, number two, yes this, yes that. And at the end of it, Prabhupada concluded by this very, very simple and practical instruction. Regarding all these things, use your common sense, and if you don't have any, find someone that does. So this is what's going on here. The cowherd men are realizing we can't figure this out, so let's find somebody that can figure it out. So they go to Nanda Baba. So Nanda Baba receives them, appreciates their inquiry, and then says, okay, what's the word he uses here? It's just a few words. Shriyatam mevacha. Shriyatam mevacha. Now hear my words, and vetu shanka. Let all doubts be removed. This is Nanda's comment to them when they come. This is also very instructive because this is not the foundation of the exchange between Arjuna and Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Is this not the very nature of our approach to our spiritual master? That when we hear from them, we want all of our doubts to be removed. You know, if you go to someone and you're looking for an answer and they kind of give you some mishmashy kind of explanation and you walk away kind of scratching your head, okay, I think I got that. I'm not real sure. Okay, maybe he meant, it doesn't help. But someone can give very definitive and strong statements and explain, okay, this is what's going on. So Nanda Maharaj does this. Now, here's the other interesting aspect of that. Does Nanda Maharaj kind of puff up his chest and, yes, now you've come to me, very good. Now I can solve all your problems for you. No, because he's a humble Vaishnava. What does he say? He says, I'll remove your doubts, but how will I remove those doubts? By relaying to you what Gargamuni Acharya told to me. This also is a very good example for us. We should not become proud in our process of development in devotional service and think, oh no, I got the answer. Yeah, I can solve your problems, no problem. When we're going out and preaching in places like community colleges in a city like Lake City, which is maybe a notch, no, I won't go there. Anyway, when we go to these places, we don't go arrogantly and proud. We go in a mood of humility. How did Lord Nityananda approach Jagai and Madai? You nonsense, I'm taking a stick and I'm going to beat you. Nityananda and Balaram are the same. Balaram killed Palambasura. Balaram helped kill Nakasura. He could certainly have done it, but he took a humble mood. Okay, you struck me, all right, whatever. Let's just forget that. Please chant Hare Krishna. So, in the same way, this is how we should approach, thinking that it's not me, but I'm going to deliver a message. This is the mood that Nanda Maharaj takes here. his process of helping the cowherd men, if you will, advance in their understanding of who Krishna is, you know, you can broaden that out as far as you want to, is in this exchange of admitting the fact that, okay, it's Garga Muni's words that are going to deliver us from this confused state that we're in. He explained to me all of these different things, you know, Krishna will be like this, Krishna will be like that. So in this way, the cowherd men very attentively heard, and this whole chapter is based upon this description of the pastimes and hearing like that. So it's very nice way. Now, when we develop our love for Krishna, and it is a fact, you should understand that all of us do have some love for Krishna, some. By the fact that we're here every day, by the fact that we're continually engaging in the process of devotional service, it means we have some love for Krishna to one degree or another, generally less, and that's why we're still here, but we do have some love for Krishna. So once we're in the process of that developing that love for Krishna, what is it that we do? What is it that pleases Krishna that we do? Well, it's the same thing here. It's speaking about Krishna. When we talk about Krishna, we become enlivened in the process of devotional service. And when we become enlivened in the process of devotional service, we want to serve more. And Krishna becomes satisfied to see that we're speaking about him. Now, in any other scenario, that's extremely egotistical. Yes, yes, everyone's talking about me. How nice. You know, and there are people like that in this world. We've all met them. And the process of hearing about themselves is very satisfying to them. The process of Krishna hearing his devotees describe him is not one about feeding his ego. It's one about the process of purification for the devotee. Because this is the purest spiritual topics of the Supreme Personality of Godhead himself. So the more we engage in that process, the more joyful we become, the happier we become in devotional service, the more satisfied Krishna becomes, the more he reciprocates with us, the more we progress, the more we want to do, and on and on, and we build and build and build like that. So this is the means by which we can actually become more advanced in the process of hearing and chanting. And yesterday we were learning some interesting things from Bhadra Prabhu. He was explaining how, you know, Krishna, there's an inner meaning, if you will, to the various demons. Krishna's saying to Mother Jasoda, I want to fly in the sky. Like a little child, right? You know, sometimes our children, when they're very little, they make these unusual requests that we just have to chuckle at. Well, you know, of course, that's not going to happen. But Krishna has the means to make it happen. You know, I want to fly in the sky. Okay, Trinavarta. You know, all right, hop on Trinavarta. Woo, way up there, you know. So, or when he's drinking the breast milk of Mother of Putana, right? Drinking poison. This is Shiva's pastime. So, closing his eyes and meditating on Lord Shiva, like that. You know. So, in this way, we find that each of the different demons, they have a various relationship to the process of devotional service. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in his Sri Chaitanya Shikshamrita that the killing of these different demons represents the removal of a variety of significant anarthas, significant shortcomings, obstacles in our path of devotional service. Now, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur has written a commentary on that, which I took a look at, and it's like way out of my realm. It's pages and pages long on each demon and, you know, very detailed analysis and wonderful reading, but a little bit lofty. So for the purposes of this class, we'll boil it down to my level of explanation. So thus far in this chapter, we've had the following demons discussed. So, or the following pastimes, because it involves pastimes, not only the killing of demons. So in verse number 3 was the discussion of the lifting of Govardhan Hill itself. Now, this is described by Bhaktivinoda Thakur as halting of the pride of Lord Indra. Same thing. By lifting the hill, he halted the pride of Lord Indra. What was that I said the other day when I gave class that? Oh, that name for Krishna. One who halts the pride of Indra. I can't remember now. So this manifests itself in two types of mentalities. One, through the means of stopping the worship of demigods. This is a very prominent aspect in human society, not so much in Western human society, but the worship of demigods. So stopping the worship of demigods, and in stopping the mentality of self-praise, of thinking that I am worshipable. Here again, back to that egotistical thing, people should discuss me, talk about me like that. So these two aspects, the pastime of lifting Gover downhill, destroy. So then in verse 4, we have the description of the Putana Lila. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes Putana as representing the pseudo-guru. And he gives three divisions on this. One, deceitfulness. The mood of preaching that sense enjoyment is approved, is appropriate, and or the giving to one's disciples a level of knowledge beyond their realizations. Those of us that had the opportunity to hear Srila Prabhupada speak can really appreciate this, because Prabhupada kept it simple. Because he knew what our level of realization was and where we were coming from. So there was no lofty Madhurya Bhav or anything like that. It's just basic. Hey, you're not that body. The second is accepting the mind as the guru. This is, I had one brahmachari friend of mine back in the old days when we were all brahmacharis together. And you'd see sometimes that kind of clouded look on his face. He would get that from time to time. Say, Prabhu, what's going on? And he would just shake his head and go, oh, it's that old rascal mind. And so sometimes we find ourselves accepting instruction from the mind, accepting the mind's dictates. So this falls under the category of the pseudo-guru. And the third purpose of this pastime of killing Putana is Krishna kills Putana in the sense of removing the poison and protecting the heart of the young advancing devotee. Very nice to be protected in that way. So then in verse number 5, we have the Shakatasura demon. This is interesting because the Shakata demon was a cart. What do you do with a cart? Carry things that are too heavy for you to carry. Well, this represents the load carrying mentality of bad habits in one's life. Now, if we have bad habits in our life, it's quite a load to carry around, especially after we've been in the process of devotional service for some period of time. We know what the bad habits are. We know when we're maintaining an attachment to something that is detrimental to our devotional service. So carrying that around becomes a burden, because mentally, intellectually, however, we know this isn't right for me. But due to some attachment, sense gratification, or some mental idea, whatever, we maintain that attachment and that activity. So these habits, it's a load to carry around. So destroying the Shakatasura demon is the process of destroying these load-carrying mentality of bad habits. And also removing the qualities of lethargy, dullness, and false pride. Bhaktisiddhanta mentions kicking these habits aside. Just as Krishna kicked the cart, so we want to kick these habits of lethargy, dullness, and false pride to the side. In the 6th verse, we have Trinavarta. Trinavarta is the representation of false pride from useless scholarship that promotes wrangling, debate, and arguments. Anybody that has any peripheral contact with the internet sees this anytime there's something comes up. You have some individuals which will produce pages upon pages upon pages, usually ad nauseam, of wrangling and debating on a subject, back and forth and back and forth, and it just becomes so dry, which is the next point. Dry reasoning, dry logic, and the association with those who practice these activities. Such association produces controversy, this is very important, which is disloyal to the path of bhakti. So not only is it a manifestation of false pride, all of this wrangling and debating and back and forth, but associating with that type of activity produces disloyalty in the path of devotional service. So we should be very cautious about that. It also mentions that Krishna killed the Trinavarta demon additionally because he was moved by the devotee's humility because they attempt to avoid this fault, and he strangled the demon and removed that thorn from the path of a devotee's devotional service. I don't know how many of you have had the opportunity to walk around Govardhan Hill barefooted, as most of the pilgrims do. There's a certain area just after Anayur and before Govindakund, actually before the Krishna Balaram Govardhan Shila temple there at the beginning of the Govindakund area, which the thorns are just outrageous. And they're little bitty thorns. But you step on one of those, and I'm telling you, you stop immediately. Seisha will attest to this. He and I walked it together. And you got to immediately stop and pull them out of your foot. It's so annoying. So Krishna removes the thorn of this false pride from the path of the devotee so that he can peacefully walk that path. So then we have verse number 7, the twin Arjuna trees, delivering of Nalakuvera and Manigriva. There's two individuals here, so two qualities are represented by this, and that is pride and arrogance according to one's birth and one's wealth. This pride and arrogance in one's birth and wealth give rise to debauchery of the tongue. And debauchery of the tongue has two manifestations. Eating bad foods, eating loosely, and loose talking. So eating unrestrictedly and loose talking are the manifestations of the debauchery of the tongue. And when these are prominent in one's devotional service, they produce cruelty to animals, lust for women, indulgence in alcohol or intoxicants, hard-heartedness, shamelessness, and disgraceful actions. All activities which we want to ban as far as possible from our own process of rendering devotional service. Verse number 8, Bakasura. Bakasura represents cunning duplicity. And that cunning duplicity manifests itself in the form of deceitful behavior, hypocrisy, and this is a real good one here, a false lifestyle of cheating activities. A false lifestyle of cheating activities. In other words, being duplicitous, presenting one type of activity in one scenario and another type of activity in one's private life. So, there's just a little side note here that Bakasura in his previous birth had two brothers. So these three brothers were all cursed by Lord Shiva, and they became Bakasura, Keshi, and Palumba. So, verse number 9, Vatsasura. Vatsasura represents the childish mentality. Now, we might not think, oh, you know, these little kids, you know, I mean, what's wrong with being a little childish in one's, you know, youthful nature, right? But this isn't referring to that type of innocent childish mentality, but a childish mentality that prevents one from moving forward. We're not intended to be children all of our life. We're intended to mature and advance and move on. So it manifests itself in a nature of mischievousness, where one is easily influenced by bad association and in a greediness for sense gratification. Now, doesn't that kind of, that right there, capsulize the childish mentality? Children, they don't have that, generally haven't developed that rational sense yet. So they see something they want, they simply want it. You know, you've seen the classic example of the kid in the grocery store, and he wants the candy, and the mother's not buying it, and then all of a sudden you have this temper tantrum. Right? So this greediness for sense gratification is not checked. So this is the killing of the vatsasura. And then today's verse, verse 10, Dhanakasura. The jackass. Dhanakasura is ignorance of the knowledge of the soul through gross materialism. And Bhaktisiddhanta refers to it as the jackass mentality. It says it all right there, you know. Ignorance of the knowledge of the soul, not just ignorance of the knowledge of the soul, but ignorance of the knowledge of the soul through gross materialism. Now an interesting thing about the Nakasura's previous birth, he was the son of Bali, one of Bali's sons. And he was in one particular celestial mountain range enjoying with 10,000 women and making quite a bit of hoopla in the process. Carrying on, you know, you've seen it, where the tailgate parties, like before the game, you know, I mean, people are really having a so-called good time and carrying on, making all kinds of noise and all. So just near there, Durvasa Muni was engaged in some meditation, was greatly disturbed by this. So because of this activity, he exclaimed when he saw this son of Bali, he said, "You're an ass-like person and a fool. I curse you to become an ass. For 400,000 years, Durvasa Muni's got quite a temper. You definitely don't want to cross Durvasa Muni. You think you got it rough this life, try 400,000 years of jackass." So, and then he said, however, but the catch of the curse was that he wouldn't be killed like all the other demons in Vrindavan by Krishna, because Krishna, as Vamana, had made a promise to Bali, "I will never harm any of your descendants." So Balaram had to be the one to kill Dhanakasura. So these are just some of the pitfalls of devotional service that we might want to be very cautious to avoid. There were a couple of other points that came to mind as I was reading these different verses. The first verse here, in the purport, it describes how these two Arjuna trees were old and thick and towered above little Krishna's courtyard. I was checking out a subdivision there my way back from High Springs the other day, looking at an area that we end up through my connection at Lowe's making deliveries to a lot of times. I've never been in that part of this area, and I've lived here for 16 years. So I pulled in there, and there was this one yard. It's like one of those subdivisions in the process. You know, there's only a few houses. And there's this one yard, this one house, kind of in the middle of this area that's eventually going to be built up. And it's got a nice fenced-in yard. And in the backyard is absolutely the most humongous oak tree. And it goes up, and it's completely full. It has no Spanish moss. It's completely towering over this entire piece of property. And it's so beautiful. Now, we've got our trees around here that, they're gigantic. They've been here for who knows how long. And Kalyapani has sometimes, due to his service, the need to trim or remove these. Now, I don't know if any of you have had the opportunity to assist him in cleaning up some of that, or in your own homes have had to clean up trees that go down. They're absolutely ridiculously heavy. Tree trunks are not just like, okay, let's pick this up. Even you cut tree trunks into a size about the size of this podium, you still can't pick it up. They're so heavy. I dropped about 15 trees at my property with the help of some of my friends just about a year ago. And, I mean, it took me a good 6 months to haul all that stuff away. It's just all back-breaking work. And here's two trees, huge Arjuna trees. We can only imagine the size of them. Towering, it says. It doesn't say they're nice tall trees. Towering over Krishna's courtyard. And Krishna just like pulls them right over. Like it's a little mortar stuck between them, and all right, little baby, and boom, they come right over. So you can just imagine how incredible that is. So, and then speaking of trees, I wanted to mention there's the Bandirovan Forest is a part of where these different pastimes take place. And speaking of big trees, in the Bandirovan Forest is one banyan tree. And this banyan tree is said in the Shastras to be so big that it actually covered miles. Now, down in Sarasota, there's a big banyan tree on Thomas Edison's estate, said to be the biggest banyan tree in America or this part of the world or whatever. The thing is big, but it doesn't cover miles. So this particular tree was very full and richly laden with all different types of beautiful leaves and flowers, and it's described that it looked like a beautiful cloud just hanging over the Bandirovan Forest. And its branches actually extended so long that they extended over parts of the Jamuna to the other bank. And this was how the Cowherd boys would get across to the other side of the Jamuna. You know, they would just climb up the tree and climb up the branch and pop down on the other side. So, huge tree like that. Now, we were discussing about the Vatsasura demon, mentioned about him. The Vatsasura demon, as we all know, took the form of a calf. And so Krishna, it took the form of a calf, form of a jackass, took the form of a giant crane. And, you know, Krishna just killed them one after the other just to get rid of them because they were interrupting the pastimes with the residents of Vrindavan, mostly with the Cowherd boys. So after he kills the Vatsasura demon, then the gopis are there. And so in a mood of jest, which will later manifest in a different manner, but in a mood of jest in this particular pastime, the gopis say, oh, you just killed a calf. We're having nothing to do with you. You have to take some purification bath. So Krishna decides, they weren't exactly near the Jamuna. Of course, we described before how the pastimes of Vrindavan are like a lotus flower opening and closing, and so sometimes things are very close. But in this particular pastime, they weren't exactly close. So Krishna took his flute and shoved it into the ground and dug a kund. It's called Venukup. And so then he called all of the different holy waters to come to this place. And then he took his bath in it, along with the Cowherd boys, had a little bit of fun in the water there. And so this well was there, so to speak, and that's how they that's how we became purified after this. And it's mentioned that this place is near where this Bandirovan tree is. Now, of course, to say it's near a tree that covers several miles is, you know, not necessarily that it's going to be close to everything else. But it mentions that if one goes to a place, because Venukup is still there, and if one goes to that place and bathes it, one's relieved of all sinful activities and gets the benefit of having visited every sacred place. It's also noted that after Balaram killed Pralambasura, he went there to drink water from that place and to take a little rest. It was a little bit of strenuous activity, if there is such a thing, for Lord Balaram in killing Pralambasura. So he then took a bit of rest after that. Now, in the verse number 9, there was the mention of the kapita fruit. Kapita. So I looked up kapita fruits. Zip. Nothing. Nada. Couldn't find a word. Not in any of the Shastras, not in any of the Vanipedia, not anywhere in Google. Even Google Prabhu failed me. So what to do? So then, all right, well, maybe it's a botanical name. So I put in, you know, to a botanical website and entered it. Got absolutely nothing. So I went to my best reference and resource, Dhruva Maharaj Prabhu. He's even better than Google, I'll tell you right now. And he gave me a connection on a link that describes the kapita fruit, kapita tree. And I thought it'd be relevant because it gives us an idea of why the Cowherd boys, what was that place here? Let me just, here we go. After Krishna killed Vatsasura, he used him to swing around and knock these different fruits out of the tree. So, you know, the sport of knocking them. But what was the point of it? So we'll see from the description of this particular type of fruit. In English, it's called a few names. The wood apple, the monkey fruit, or curd fruit. And you'll see why that word is applicable here in a little bit. And it has kind of a citrus scent to it when the leaves are crushed. And the fruit has an interesting quality. The fruit has berries in it, and it can be either sweet or sour. It's kind of interesting. I don't know how it's determined, but it's both ways. And the rind is very difficult to crack open, but when it is cracked open, it can be used for bowls, and you know, dig out the fruit on the inside, and you can use it for bowls and cups and things like that. So this would be something the Cowherd boys, or, you know, maybe a little hat, you know, on their turban piece or something. You know, I mean, boys play with all these different kinds of things like that. So it's a very thick fruit that's there inside of it. And the bark of the tree has kind of a gummy nature, and you can chew it like a gum. So you can imagine the boys are chewing a little, like, you know, boys like to chew bubble gum. All kids do. So it's some type of little gummy thing, you know, with a little citrusy taste to it, you know. And the fruit itself has a very soapy nature, and so it's used in a lot of cleaning products around the home in Vedic times like that. And also is a bit sticky when it sits for a while, so it's used as a glue. It's used in making jewelry and things like that, and it's a type of glue mixed with different pigments for painting also. You know, very interesting quality there. And it's also, the oil from it's very good for scenting the hair. The Cowherd boys, you know, you could just imagine for a second how amazing the Cowherd boys must have smelled. I mean, all these different fragrances from all over Vrindavan and Govardhan Hill, and oil from the Kapita tree, and it's just amazing, the fragrance of these boys. So it grows very, very thick. And it's sometimes used as a food for elephants because it's very hardy and nourishing. And the branches on it are made into brooms, which are good for cleaning the elephant's body as well as the resin of the elephant. Now, the fruit itself is used, it's eaten just by itself, or it can be used in an assortment of different types of drinks and used in different types of sweets. And it also makes an excellent jam. All things which the Cowherd boys would just love to have. You know, they open their little lunches and there's some kapita jam from mom, you know, to go on some puris or something. I mean, how exciting would that be, you know? And it's actually eaten, just scooped right out. It doesn't have to be cooked, and it can even be eaten without any type of sweetener in it. And if you combine it with coconut milk or palm sugar syrup, which is Dhanakasura, the next demon, you combine it with that, it makes an amazing, amazing drink. And it's also used in chutneys. So all these things that the Cowherd boys would be very, very satisfied with. And it's particularly a wonderful drink during the summertime because it's very refreshing. It can be mixed with gora, you know, the jaggery, and becomes very, very tasty. Just, and sometimes it's put, the raw pulp of it is mixed in with a raita and with some yogurt like that. So just a little bit about why the Cowherd boys would be so interested to get some kapita fruit in their hands. So this is the thoughts that ran through my brain today as I looked at these different verses. And just some side notes to share. I would like to just take the last couple of minutes here and share an experience. Today is the anniversary of the arrival of Srila Prabhupada in America. Of course, we all know Prabhupada arrived first in Boston and then a short time later in New York. And I only want to share this. It's not a direct Prabhupada pastime, but it's a pastime of my serving Prabhupada that had a very strong impact on me. This was 1985. We were living in Brooklyn at the Schermerhorn Temple, and it was the 20th anniversary of Prabhupada arriving in America. The Lilamrita had been out somewhat recently, and we'd read it and studied it. And in my mind's eye, for some reason, all these years of living in New York prior to that, I had this idea that when Prabhupada's boat arrived in New York, it was right there at the harbors just below the Brooklyn Bridge. I don't know why I thought that, but that, I guess because that's the prominent places where all the boats are. But I came to realize that that was nowhere near where Prabhupada's boat docked. So for the 20th anniversary, which was coming up in a day or two, I decided to make it a mission to find out where did Prabhupada's boat dock. So I started looking and reading, and the area that it describes wasn't even still existing in that part of Brooklyn. down on 17th Street right off of the FDR. No, not the FDR, the Brooklyn-Queens Expressway, BQE. So I went down to that area, and I found where 17th Street came in to there. And on one side was a huge, big truck dealership, and on the other side was some other kind of business of some sort. And 17th Street didn't really go more than a couple of blocks. I thought, well, this is weird. I mean, it's got to be where it was. So I drove around and then went to another street, and in the back, there was a one of these junk car dealers. We can go in, you pick it, you know, you go in and you get to take the parts off that you need. And so I went in and talked to the guy, and I introduced myself as a follower of Swami Bhaktivedanta, and we were getting ready to celebrate his 20th anniversary. And apparently his boat, when he first came from India, docked somewhere here. Well, this old guy that owned that business had been there like since before dirt was created. And so he said, oh yeah, he said, right over here, that vacant stretch, there was a stretch probably half the width of this room and three times as long. He said, this vacant stretch between me and that kind of like a Sam's warehouse over there, it wasn't Sam's, it was that type of a place. He said, that used to be a berth where the ships would pull in. They filled that in years ago. That would have been it. That was the 17th Street dock where the ships would come in, that kind of ship that he was on. I described everything. This would have been the place. So I said, really? And I looked out there, and the grass was as tall as I was, and like this distance. I said, wow. And he said, yeah, you go ahead and walk out there. And I made my way through it, and there at the end, you could see where the grass hadn't grown, and all these chunks of cement had been poured in here to fill in this area. So I went back to the guy. I said, you know, I said, we want to celebrate our spiritual master's arrival, and would it be all right if we came here tomorrow and hold a program in the morning? He said, yeah, sure, what do I care? Go right ahead. So, but I looked at it, I thought, how's anybody going to get in here? So I went back to the temple, and I got a couple of devotees, and of course, it wasn't like here in Alachua, everybody's got rakes and shovels and axes and, you know, lawnmowers and whatever. I don't know how we came up with everything, but we went out there and started at the parking lot side of it, and all the way back, probably the distance safely from here to where the old Tulsi house was, cleared this path through the weeds. And I have to say, I really just got a little tiny inkling of what it must have been like for the six Goswamis uncovering all the lost places of Krishna's pastimes. It's like Prabhupada actually, this is where he got off the boat. And we got back there closer, and it was just like, well, you know, we spent the whole day, we're sweating and throwing weeds aside and made this path, and it was just like, oh, so ecstatic. So we got back to the end of the area, and there was a bit of a clearing, you know, where all the concrete had been. So we kind of fixed it up and cleaned it up a bit. So the next morning was the 20th anniversary of Prabhupada's arrival. We held Guru Puja, took Prabhupada off the Vyasasan, put him on his small traveling Vyasasan, put him in a van, and all the devotees of the temple, we drove through Brooklyn to 17th Street in the BQE. And we pulled into this parking lot of this kind of like warehouse place, and all the devotees start piling out, and the people that they've never, we put Prabhupada on a palanquin and carried him through the weeds and the rushes out to the edge and set him down there. And we held a whole morning program and read from the Lulamrita and discussed different pastimes of Prabhupada's arrival and all like that. For me, it was a particularly monumental thing because it was the first year I did a full Chaturmasya, and I'd been, like, I think this was the third month into it. And I was really feeling like this was Krishna's reciprocation with me to let me find this actual place where Prabhupada had gotten off the boat. And so we had this program there. It was very, very sweet, and it's always been fixed in my mind that, you know, a little bit of service to that one holy place that's never going to be developed, you know. I mean, it's probably got a new building on it by now. That was the intention of filling it in. But, you know, if you ever get to Brooklyn again and you got a couple of days, you know, or an afternoon, yeah, there's some pictures floating around. Yeah, there's a few pictures floating around. Yeah, but anyway, it's just something I wanted to share because it has a real personal impact on me and my service to Prabhupada. All right, over time limit. Thank you very much. All glories to wonderful Krishna.